This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Hi, I'm Shauna Meyerson with the Yoga of War podcast, here today with Ashtanga icon.
Can I call you an icon?
Jorgen Christensen, who I'm very, very blessed to call a personal friend. If you appreciate and enjoy these shows, please consider supporting the podcast. Details are pinned in the comments below. So today, Jorgen and I are going to be talking about a wide range of topics. Mostly, what does yoga say about war? And more specifically, how would yoga respond to the current war between Israel, Hamas, and just about every other country that surrounds them? So without further ado, let's get directly into this conversation, which I'm looking forward to as much as I'm sure you are. Jorgen, thank you so much for joining me today. This show has been quite a while in the making.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me.
I want to start actually with a personal question. So we were going to do a show today, and for personal reasons, you emailed me and said that you would not be able to make it. And then you emailed me and said, I have to make it.
Yeah.
What happened?
No, we were scheduled for something else, but I rearranged things because it is an important topic. And I have never spoken out during my career. All these years, I never took a stance. I never spoke up of politics because it's divisive. But I feel this particular issue is so different because it's not about politics. It's about light over darkness, which is a classic thing in yoga, good over evil, and that's how I see it. Anyone who looks deeper and educates themselves will see that that is the truth.
But we could have rescheduled. You said to me, I have to come now. I have to. What changed? So on Sunday, obviously, we had a horrible massacre that that went on in Bondi Beach in Australia. And that was when you told me you're going to move your schedule.
Yeah. Anytime something like that happens, it becomes more urgent. And it's a reminder. And it's actually how I broke my silence also. I was quiet for about a year and a half. And then I couldn't be quiet anymore. After the couple got shot in DC, that's when I decided to break my silence. It was too much violence in the name of whatever. And we were supposed to be in Australia still if it wasn't for our puppy who needed to get picked up early. Otherwise, we would have been at Bondi visiting our friends in Sydney.
Yeah. It's always amazing because if we believe that there's a greater plan, which I believe, and the concepts of karma in all the, whether you're Christian, Jewish, whether you follow yoga philosophy, there's always this element of fatalism of where are we? Where are we supposed to be? Mm-hmm. Where do we need to be to deliver the message that we need to deliver in this lifetime? And whenever we find ourselves not in the place where we were supposed to be and where something horrifying happens, it seems like there's a hand of God involved in there. And I use the word God loosely. I 100% believe anybody could interpret God however they want to. But how does that make you feel to think, I would have been in Bondi that day. I would have been with my Jewish friends supporting them at this celebration. And here you are in Los Angeles watching it in horror from afar, knowing that you could have been right there in the middle of it all.
Yeah. It is interesting how that happens. And for me, it could have gone either way. You know, I don't operate out of fear, and I would like to just acknowledge the victims of this horrible massacre and their families, and also the enormous amount of heroes that stepped up and covered children that weren't their own. They were looking for their own child. They couldn't find them, but they found a girl instead. She covered the girl. It got shot in the leg, you know, talking calmly. There was so many incidents like that of people who just acted unselfishly and courageously. So I want to acknowledge that. And I think you will have that in you if you have strong faith, if you are aligned with that vibration. And that's the difference. I believe in vibrations. If you're aligned with a vibration of truth and fearlessness and nonviolence, that will guide you. And likewise, as I see it, the other side is vibrating on a lower thing about selfishness, ignorance, anger, hate, envy. And that's basically what it comes down to. This whole thing, this whole war, is and never was about borders. And that's what people need to get out of their head, because they keep repeating, oh, two-state solution and this and that. And there would have been so many opportunities for that. So many opportunities. And occupation. What was the occupation before 67?
Right.
So people need to understand that this is and never was about borders. It was never about land. It is and always was a, you can say, religious war, but it's, you can be kind and say it's a particular sect of a religion that practices jihadism. Because I do want to acknowledge the difference between Muslims, for instance, in United Arab Emirates and people in Gaza or West Bank, mm-hmm. who are being, you know, brought up, brainwashed to hate, which is the truth. They're being brought up that way, and practicing Muslims in more moderate countries are practicing their religion differently. So I don't want to bash Islam as such, but I think it's super important that we allow ourselves to call out the extremism without being blamed for being bigots and racists and, you know, Islamophobic.
So first of all, is the difference between Islam and Islamism? Okay, so Islamism is the radical.
It's like political. Yes.
Yep. And Islam is the religion. So that's where we can draw a safe distinction, yeah. I think. But when you say this was never about land, I'm gonna take it a step further. Mm-hmm. What we're seeing in the streets, what we're seeing, what we just saw in Bondi and what we saw in DC, this also has nothing to do with the war. Forget about the borders. Yes, the war is not about the borders. Mm-mm. And this is not about the war.
No.
This is the same anti-Semitism that has repeated generation after generation.
Yeah. It is a war against Jews.
Against Jews. That's exactly it. But it has nothing to do with the kinetic war in Gaza.
Nothing geographic. It's against a people, which is the mind-boggling thing of all these social justice and people who think they're doing the right thing. How can they not see that this minority is being hunted and oppressed? How have they inverted truth so drastically? And I think it's from many years, 78 years of indoctrination, of brainwashing people, saying something over and over again, because humans are basically just repeating something that they have heard enough times. Mm-hmm. If you hear something enough times, you will believe it. And so over these last few years, when certain news networks kept repeating the ongoing genocide, the famine, you just say it enough times, it just gets people angry and fired up, and they believe it. There's no discernment. People are not calm enough to, or they don't, they're too lazy to really do the research.
It is hard when the media, when NGOs, when politicians, when diplomats are all towing the same line. Mm-hmm. So it's very hard. I always say this. If you were to ask me about any topic that's not Israel, I mean, literally any topic, I probably have an opinion on it because I'm a very opinionated person. But I will admit that it's probably not an informed opinion. Mm-hmm. It'll be a very superficial opinion based on what I've been able to piece together from the information that was given to me on a topic that's not super important to me. Mm-hmm. Okay? Yeah. Even if I think it's an important topic, it's not what I've vested myself in. So you take the average person who gets their news from, in the best case scenario, the actual news, in the worst case scenario, social media. Mm-hmm. Either way, they're being inundated with anti-Israel content that is of an anti-Semitic nature because it all relies on lies, propaganda, and double standards. I understand how people are misled, right? I mean, yes, you had a particular awakening for a particular reason.
I did.
Let's talk not just the shooting, but what made you informed about what's really going on?
I think that's the most interesting thing. And as yogis, we're supposed to be flexible, not just physically, but in the mind, and have the ability to change your opinion or stance on something is a sign of strength. But people are so rigidly holding on to whatever they saw first, and then they only look for things that affirm that belief to reaffirm. They never question. And I grew up in Sweden, which is very pro-Palestinian because we had refugees. And I never really questioned, but I heard my whole life the victimhood, the Palestinian refugees, which is an interesting thing, by the way, the refugee status that just pass it onto generations. People who have never been to the region are born in a different country and they're refugees.
Well, here's the thing, Jorgen. Most people, when you say that, are like, well, of course, like they literally don't understand that this is, again, a double standard that applies only to the Palestinians and exactly no other refugees on Earth.
It's a special quota, special, yeah.
Yeah.
And because of that, there's so many more millions of Palestinians around the world, whatever that means, Palestinians, people who come from that region at some point. But I had this kind of lazy view. I never questioned it, but I also never took really a stance about it. Otherwise, I probably would have done the research. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until maybe 10 years ago when my yoga student, Mossab, entered the picture, and he, introduced himself as Palestinian. I just assumed, oh, okay, I'm not going to talk about anything or whatever, but we became really close friends, and we were hanging out, and I was just in the process of starting to renovate my house. We were out pulling weeds in the front yard, and he said, "This reminds me of pulling weeds with my mother." And he got a bit emotional because, he had to leave his family. He was denounced by his family. But we started talking about the whole situation, and he completely opened my eyes. And from then on, I did my research on history, and I dug in. And what other voice would be credible than the son of a Hamas leader? People...
That's right.
Talk about, they listen to psychologists, psychiatrists sitting in Canada safely, having their opinion. Oh, this person is Jewish. We have to listen to him. No, they just want to sensationalize, or they're bringing politics into the picture, and which makes them lose sight of what is right and wrong, what is light and darkness, makes them blind. But yeah, I would have to give Mossab the credit of opening my eyes and starting this whole process of researching.
So for anybody who doesn't know, he's talking about Mossab Hossan Youssef, who happened to wander into your yoga class. if you don't know who he is the son of one of the founders of Hamas. Now, he's been advocating, I mean, his story is incredible. It's called The Green, it's called Son of Hamas. I have the book right there.
Son of Hamas.
It's an extraordinary book. There's a movie about it called The Green Prince, I believe is what
new
it's
book
called.
Also.
Yeah. And what astounds me is how many people will stand up to Mossad from Canada, from UK, and say, no, I know better.
Yeah.
It's like my father started Hamas.
Yeah.
In brief, he was put in jail, Mossad, for being a Hamas operative as a young man. He saw that there was a lot of Hamas killing Hamas. I mean, it was ridiculous. Palestinians killing each other within these jails.
He saw young men coming into his house being trained for suicide bombings,
yes,
et cetera. And I think there was a particular incident where they were planning an attack that would have killed hundreds of people. And his conscience couldn't bear it. And that's why he went to tell.
That was after he was in jail, though.
Yeah, yeah.
It was in jail that he saw that the viciousness wasn't just against the Jews. Mm-hmm. They were turning on each other.
Exactly.
And so for anybody who doesn't know, read the book, watch the movie. But he basically became a double agent for the Mossad. But it astounds me, people who claim to know more than the people who actually witnessed, mm-hmm, and were there and were deeply ensconced in this whole thing. Okay, so
people are delusional.
They're delusional.
So
sorry, I just wanted to interject because people, I know what you're talking about, but people don't necessarily know. Okay, so you're pulling weeds with him, and so he says the thing, and you're like,
we start talking about the whole situation and it becomes really clear. I've always had my own opinion about certain aspects of certain groups who practice the religion. I've seen tendencies, and so I know what he's talking about. It's I would dare to say that not all cultures are the same.
Of course they're not.
People are, you know, and that's not the race. We're not talking about race, but we are allowed to say that certain cultures are more evolved. And when you train your children to hate and stab and kill and murder another people for their religion, I think that is way, you know, it doesn't qualify as being a civilized culture at all. And it needs to stop. And I'm not saying this is all of Islam. I'm saying this is this particular region. There's a reason why people don't want refugees from Gaza and West Bank in the rest of the Arab world.
Exactly. I mean,
they don't want the trouble. They don't want the problems.
That's right. And when we you, Europe, had this huge influx of Muslim refugees in 2015-16, then 2017, by no coincidence, in Malmo, where you're from, there was the firebombing of a synagogue.
Yeah.
Now, is your family still in Malmo?
No, I have an older
okay.
brother.
Uh-huh.
He's not in Malmo, he's out in the countryside.
Okay.
A comfortable place. But interestingly enough, he fosters young men from Afghanistan.
Okay.
But he has that personality. He's got a firm hand, he's kind, but he tries to rehabilitate, but he's telling me how difficult it is with most of them because they are so indoctrinated.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had one young kid who was assimilating and wanted so much to study and was not of the same angry, militant behavior, and he was deported. So somehow we keep the aggressive ones and send back the ones that had potential to assimilate. This is my criticism. I don't know what's going on. I don't know too much about the situation in Sweden, but I know it's changing because some people have really had enough of what's going on. And so anytime that happens, it's going to bring about extremism on both sides. It's just the nature of things, but it should have been caught a long time ago. And I think Swedes are just by nature very well intent, slightly naive, thinking that all people are the same as them.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's mm-hmm. kind. If you show them kindness, they'll be mm-hmm. kind. It's not necessarily true. It can be taken advantage of.
Mm-hmm.
It's seen as a weakness. And so I hope in all of Europe, actually, I hope that the situation changes at some point. It's not fair that people cannot celebrate their religious holidays. They cannot celebrate Christmas. They cannot celebrate New Year's in Paris. They have to close all these things down based on intimidation
mm-hmm.
from a certain community. That is oppression.
Yeah.
I mean, how can people not see that this cannot go on?
Yeah, you really touched upon something important when you talked about the cultural relativism, because as yoga people, we are trained. Love and light, right? Mm. And so therefore, everyone must, at the heart of it, be good. Now here's the two issues. One is it's a false assumption, mm-hmm. as you just said.
Yes.
There's absolutely nothing to compare radical Islam to any other religious extremist movement on earth. Now, the other thing that I want to point out, though, is that even if people look at Gaza because they have no concept of what actual war looks like, that's just war. It's what it always looks like. Mm-hmm. But let's say, fine, they look at Gaza, it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking for me. It's mm-hmm. heartbreaking for any human being to see what's going on in Gaza,
mm-hmm.
okay? So let's just say, okay, they have no context. Israel is horrible. They destroyed Gaza, all the things.
Mm-hmm.
That they have extended that to say, and therefore we can hate Jews, we can call for death of Jews, we can align with terrorists,
mm-hmm.
no matter how good or how bad the Jews are. Like that leap from I believe in the precepts of yoga to I believe it's okay to call for the death of a whole group of people.
Because people are emotional and they see the social media, which is, it didn't exist before to this extent. Now people are getting all their information, videos from a very, very effective media campaign, propaganda,
mm-hmm.
even orchestrated fake, you know, images of suffering children. And I'm not to say that there's no suffering, but not to the extent that they were making up. There were so many libels.
Mm-hmm.
There were so many lies, but people are emotional and they react to what they see, and that leads them to demonize Israel and Jews. And so it's a justification in their mind. They're doing something good. They're finding evil, but they have inverted the truth completely.
Agree. Naming evil as you see it is not the same as calling for death to a whole people.
Mm-hmm.
That is a bridge too far that nobody is taking against any other. Now, a lot of people are making the analogy to Russia, okay? Like who's in the streets on the campuses, you know, intimidating Russians eating dinner at a Russian, at any restaurant, you know, et cetera, okay? This is actually also a false analogy because Israel is not Russia. Israel is Ukraine. Mm-hmm. Israel was the one that was invaded.
Mm-hmm.
Israel is the one that suffered mm-hmm. under the hands of brutal, savage terrorists
mm-hmm.
of the likes that the West can't even conceive of.
And some people don't even know what happened, even though this was live streamed.
By Hamas themselves.
People somehow have, I don't know why they don't do their research. They were killing people with glee. They were enjoying. It is so cruel, so brutal, and so demonic. I don't know how people cannot see. Somehow they justify it in their mind. I don't know what goes on. Are they apologizing them for being more simple people? Where is the reasoning? Are they giving them a free card, or they're emotional? It didn't happen in a vacuum. That's a very famous, popular phrase.
Yeah,
it started a long time ago, and yes, it did start a long time ago. And people need to do the research. This has been going mm-hmm. on since the formation of Israel, before that.
I mean, since the advent of Islam.
People are talking about since Israel was formed. No, I mean, how do you explain the violence against Jews in Hebron and those mm-hmm. places? How do you explain this? It's, no, it's been going on for
thousands of years. Since the 7th century when it comes to Islam.
Yeah.
Okay, or I guess it's the 8th century, the 700s. But people, so they only want to go as far back as they find convenient.
Yeah, they do.
And they don't understand also that the the establishment of the state of Israel, they're like, oh, colonizers. First of all, to be a colonizer, you have to have a state. That means one state is coming to take over another state. Yeah. The only state the Jews had was Israel.
Yeah.
They were already there. They Judea, had been there.
And then it was the British mandate of Palestine. And so the Jews... For everyone, the Jews were Palestinian. There was the Palestinian football team, there was the Palestinian everything. The Jews were Palestinian. There were Arabs living on that land, and more came when the Jews built a really nice place out of the barren land, which is very an interesting analogy, actually, compared to the story of the Mahabharata. You've heard of Mahabharata?
I don't know that story.
So there's a story. And it always comes to mind, and it's the same thing. It's a righteous war. The Mahabharata, they were a family. And long story short, they had to split the kingdom because they couldn't agree.
Mm-hmm.
One basically is led by light and one is by darkness. Mm. One was envious and cunning and wanted more, but they couldn't agree, so they split the country. What happened was that in a conniving way, they lost their kingdom in a game of dice where they were cheated out of their kingdom and exiled into the forest for 12 years. And they had to go in hiding. And when they came back, they just asked for their kingdom back. But the evil said no. And they asked for 5 villages. They said, no, and you won't even get a grain of sand.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so this is the, here you can see the same tendency, the envious, hateful tendency that are in people throughout history and time. And, you know, I always like to see this analogy between the blind king and his son, and he's favoring the son, even though the son has horrible qualities. He's hateful, envious, jealous, and this is what happens when you give into that. And basically the war was between when they couldn't agree, at the end they had to go to war. Krishna went as a peace officer one last time, trying to have peace.
Mm-hmm.
And they insulted him and he left, and then that led up to the war. And mm-hmm. this war is called a war of dharma or righteousness.
Mm-hmm.
And people were aligning right before the war. People were allowed or free to change side. Mm-hmm. If they felt they were on the wrong side, they would mm-hmm. go to the other side. And it meant that Arjuna had to fight some of his cousins and half-siblings who were on the other side. And he didn't want to fight. He threw down his bow. He said, I don't want to fight. How can I fight? I have teachers on that side. I have relatives, how mm-hmm. can I fight?
Mm-hmm.
And Krishna said, you do it because it's the righteous thing. They have chosen that side of darkness. And so pick up your bow and fight for truth. And so this leads us into the misconception of ahimsa or nonviolence in yoga. So many yogis think that ahimsa just means that you're a pacifist. And when someone comes to try to kill you or your family, you just hide and be a coward. And that is not the truth. It's your justice. It's your duty.
That's right.
It's your duty to protect this body and other bodies who are pursuing truth and light. And there are demonic entities. There are demons in this world. Not everyone is pursuing light. Some people have a very low vibration and they're in a different path.
Well, likewise, I would say that those who claim, see, I told you the light's going to go in. Talking about the light, well, you're going to be illuminated. To those who claim that their guiding principle is ahimsa, mm-hmm. and then point to the savages of Hamas mm. and say, those are my people, and I'm going to stand up for those people. I mean, the cognitive dissonance is, you can't even, yeah. we're talking about the most brutal, there's not even, honestly, we don't have words for the kind of brutality that occurred on 10-7. No. And to align with that
yeah.
is to renounce the ahimsa
yeah.
that people claim to live by.
Yeah, yeah. It is an injustice. And I see a lot of young people, it's almost become fashionable to be hailing Hamas yeah. as, you know, warriors and as something good. It's just ridiculous. But as far as yogis getting this mixed up, I think it's just from a very long time of, you know, brainwashing, being programmed by hearing the same over and over again, mm-hmm. and having the narrative or thinking that Israel stole land and, you know, kicked out the Arabs, the Nakba, the catastrophe, mm-hmm. which was the Arabs saying no to their own state because they wanted everything, and instead waged war with five other countries against Israel. Israel won. The Arab leaders told their people to leave the country and later come back before that invasion. They lost the war. That's the catastrophe.
Yes.
There's nothing worse than losing a war to the feeble Jews.
That's right.
That's an insult to their pride. And so that's what they mean by the Nakba. And they have completely distorted that whole history. People need to educate themselves about it.
Yeah.
It's been the whole time. It's so clear to see that there's one people who just want to be left alone and live in peace. And they do everything they can to try to appease, even talk about two-state solution, which was never accepted by the Palestinians. Mm-hmm. And the other side is just continuously starting wars.
That's right.
And they state it. They say clearly, we will never stop. We will never accept a two-state.
Yeah.
Why don't we believe it when they say it? Why do we keep talking about the two-state when one side does not want it?
Right.
It's just ridiculous.
Now, I've had a number of amazing historians on the show who have gone over literally this whole history, but I just want to encapsulate basically, do you want to switch sides so the light's in my eye?
I'm okay.
Because yeah, I don't mind having the light in my eye. I'm so sorry about that. Look, you're like all bright.
It's okay.
That's because the sun shines on you again.
It's okay.
But basically what happened was, so British Mandate Palestine was just a name for a region. Golda Meir said very famously, you can find it all over the internet, yeah. I am a Palestinian. That's yeah. what her passport said. The Jewish orchestra was Palestinian. The Jewish soccer team was Palestinian. The Jewish, you know, name it. The Palestinian mm-hmm. flag had a Jewish star in the middle of it. Okay. Mm-hmm. It was the Israeli flag.
Yeah.
Once the British decided to divide up the mandate, what they actually originally planned on giving to Israel included what was called Transjordan, which was Israel plus Jordan, mm-hmm. which is like 10 times bigger than Israel.
Yeah.
Then they said, okay, and by the way, all the Jordanians are what we would consider today Palestinian.
There is a Palestinian state. It's
That's
Jordan.
Right. So if we want to talk about, oh, well, they had all this, we're talking about this tiny strip of land. Mm-hmm. So then the Brits said, okay, fine, we won't give you this much. We're going to give you this much. Mm-hmm. And the Arabs said, that's too much. Mm-hmm. So the Brits said, okay, we're going to give half of that to the Arabs and half of that to the Jews. Mm-hmm. And the Jews, now that they're getting something in the vicinity of a tenth of what they originally promised, said, mm-hmm. or 1/20th, okay, because we just want a state. That's what happened when a nation wants a state. They say, you're going to give me a state? I'll take it.
Yes.
The Palestinians said, no state, no peace, no negotiations. Mm-hmm. The famous three no's. This is why they do not have a state. They've been offered a state five times since then. Mm-hmm. Not only have they rejected it, but the first and second intifadas came out of rejected peace plans. No compromise, right. No discussion.
Right.
We don't want that offer. Now we're going to kill you. Mm-hmm. If people understood the facts of what's actually going on here, mm-hmm. I would like to hope that they would see things differently.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, in this world of intersectionality, where brown can do no wrong and white can do no right,
exactly.
The irony being that more than 50% of Jews are people of color. Yeah. But I shouldn't even have
it's
to make
shame
that
we
argument.
Even have to talk in those terms.
Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. People are like that. I've had people say, oh, those poor brown children. And I feel for all children in the process. But, you know, what about children that were strangled and murdered also? Why should we care what color they are or what race? Brutality is brutality. And casualties of war is very different from a flat-out murder, strangling someone. You know, Hamas having as a practice to hide behind children.
Mm-hmm.
Is the most uncivilized and war crime. And no one talks about that. It's just like it's a thing they do. They hide under mosques and hospitals, and they use their children as shields. And they don't have any regard for human life, not their own people either.
It's a winning proposition.
Yeah.
Because if they have a terrorist base under a hospital, mm-hmm. and the only way for Israel to get to the terrorists is to go through the hospital, mm-hmm. then they win. Israel
casualties
came
dies,
to...
And it's a win-win, because then those casualties will be blamed on Israel.
That's right.
And it's interesting to see that Israel just wanted this tiny piece, but the Palestinians cannot accept, or the Arab world, you could say, cannot accept that Israel has even, like I said before, a grain of sand.
That's
right. That's where the story is very similar. Because they do not want that Jewish state in the middle of their land.
That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
I mean,
people think it's such a small regional thing, and they don't even understand that Gaza was Egypt. West Bank was Jordan. I mean, it's what were they before? They're still Egyptians, still Jordanians.
Well, people don't understand that Israel unilaterally withdrew from Gaza in 2005 and handed over a de facto state, mm-hmm. and once again were responded to with nothing but terror and violence.
I know.
So this is why they had to close the borders, which, by the way, there's no country on earth without closed borders.
Right.
And Egypt's border is 100 times more fortified
massive.
Than the Israeli border. But
there wouldn't be a border if there wasn't all these attacks, stabbings,
exactly.
suicide bombings, everything that happened. I mean, Musab told me about how he used to, on the weekends, drive to the ocean with his father.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there were no checkpoints. This all started happening early 90s.
When he started telling you these things, was there anything in you that said, "Yeah, no, that's not how I learned it," or did you?
No, I just
immediately
opened it.
Understand.
I was receptive and just listened to his whole story, because I knew this is coming from a credible source. It's his own lived experience, and he was on the other side. So I was careful not to form an opinion, but I did ask a lot of questions.
Yeah.
But then
and
it became
important.
Clear, and then throughout my research from my previous ignorant, you know, not knowing the history fully, it became so clear,
mm-hmm.
what the truth really is, and that this was a big money-making scheme for people like Arafat. He could have accepted the deal, but turned it down. I mean, people made billions on staying in this refugee state,
mm-hmm.
and that's what people don't understand.
Mm-hmm. So let's get, even though I did a whole show on this, it was a different perspective. I'd like to get back briefly, or maybe even not briefly, to the Bhagavad Gita, because I think that this story, which is so such a cornerstone of Vedic lore,
mm-hmm.
And as yoga people, this is one of the primary texts that we study or mm-hmm. should be looking at.
That in Yoga Sutras, yeah.
And exactly. And so there's this concept that there is a not a choice, as you've already alluded to, not alluded to, said, but a moral imperative that when your family, your nation mm-hmm. is in existential threat, mm-hmm. it is your duty. Responsibility, yep, not your choice, to defend them. Now, mm-hmm. we saw that in the U.S. war on terror, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, we had 9/11 happen. It was a disturbing, tragic horror. Mm-hmm. It was faceless compared to somebody coming in and slashing, you know, a woman's breast mm-hmm. off, right? Mm-hmm. There's something to be said for the brutality of the face-to-face orgiastic glee that happened on 10/7. But so the American response was the war on terror, right? In the whole West, people don't understand that if you take the standards by which the Hamas Ministry of Health measured how many people were killed in the war. Exactly, right? They're trying to create this virtue around this, it's a terrorist arm. When they say how many people died, they include people who die of old age, people who died of cancer, people who died of misfired Hamas rockets that mm-hmm. landed on their own people. Yeah. Now,
and their fighters were civilians all the
time. That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. And now there's never a war that doesn't have food insecurity involved. That is a natural, unfortunate circumstance of war.
Yeah.
Now, when we look at the war on terror, the West war on terror that unfolded throughout the Middle East for years and years, approximately 20, if you take actual civilian casualties, mm-hmm. okay, collateral damage, as we call it, people who died due to war inflicted medical challenges, food insecurity, all the byproducts of war. Mm-hmm. There were 2.5 million civilian deaths in the war on terror. 2.5 million. So if we were to take that standard and apply it to Gaza, we're probably talking about 15,000, 20,000 collateral damage, even as they're being used as human shields. Mm-hmm. And yet not a single person marched in the street, encamped on a campus, showed up to kill an American at an embassy, you know, or whatever, a Brit at an embassy in D.C. The people need to understand the nature of these double standards that apply mm-hmm. to no one but Israel ever. Mm-hmm. And what people also don't understand is when it comes to ahimsa, we have the Hamas leaders and even the children of Gaza, I hate to say it, the children of Gaza, who say that if they are given the opportunity, mm-hmm. they will cut off a Jew's head. Mm-hmm. This is what they live for. Mm-hmm. It just is. Yeah. This is an indictment on the society, not on innocent children, but on the fact that they've been indoctrinated. Right. Now,
so how do you deal with the situation? How do you deal with the culture and people like that? It is, you can't certainly can't have them as neighbors. It doesn't work.
That's right. But for one second, I want to talk about how Israel has prosecuted this war, because people don't even understand. They give away their entire war plan, which no country would ever do because it ruins the element of surprise, so that civilians can get out of the way.
Yeah.
They call and text the civilians to tell them to get out of the way. Mm-hmm. They go through hospitals that are infiltrated by Hamas operatives, mm-hmm. and they go room by room at their own peril, at the own peril of the mm-hmm. IDF, in order to physically remove patients mm-hmm. safely from the hospital, mm-hmm. in order to fight the operatives that are hiding in the hospital, mm-hmm. only to be blamed.
Yeah.
For operating in a hospital.
And how many of those soldiers die in the process?
That's right.
Doing that conscientious decision.
That's exactly it. People don't understand that if this were an actual genocide, Israel has the might.
It could have been over on October 8th.
That's right. Israel has the might to destroy Gaza in an hour.
It's so simple. When you ask people, Israel did not do what they're claiming that they're doing, the genocide. They have the means, but not the desire. Now, the other way around, Hamas has the desire, but thankfully not the means. Because everyone knows what Hamas would do if they had the means.
How do they know?
How would they know? Because they're trying. They're not giving
They're not
up.
Just trying. They say it out loud.
Yeah, they say it out loud. They say it out loud. We will never stop. It'll happen 1,000 times over and over. And I don't understand why people somehow can't hear the message directly from the horse's mouth. Mm-hmm. They're stating it. It's in their charter. Why are we making excuses? Why are we... It is mind-boggling.
Yes. Now, another aspect of the Bhagavad Gita. So we discussed ahimsa and the responsibility to defend your people. The other thing that's very interesting about this, and quite frankly, it draws some from very distinct parallels to stories that are directly from the Torah, but that Arjuna was given the choice. You could have all these men, all these beasts, all these weapons on your side, or you could have me, God, not me. I mean, I hope he wouldn't choose me. That wouldn't do that well. Or you could have me, God, on your side.
Yeah.
And he chose God.
Yeah.
And again, I'm using the term God very, very loosely.
And Duryodhan had the second choice.
That's right. But he was mad about it.
He was laughing and said, ha-ha, of course I'll take the army.
That's right. Because he was mad that Arjuna was given the first choice. And he's like, of course he's going to choose the army. He's going to choose the weapons. And Arjuna is like, I take you. Right?
Yeah.
And so
Duryodhan was driven by greed and, you know, lust for power.
That's right.
So
this comes back to this concept of good and evil as evidenced by, again, I'm using the term loosely, God meaning whatever God you believe in. I don't care if it's Shiva. I don't care if it's Jesus. I don't care if it's Buddha, Allah, God. Mm-hmm. That God represents righteousness.
Yeah.
And on the other side of righteousness, because we live in the world of prakriti, right? Of, how would you pronounce that? I'm really bad at pronunciation, but of duality.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing always being that there cannot be any good without any evil, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If there's no evil, then it just becomes a spectrum of how good are you, and the worst good becomes the evil. Okay, so if we want to have absolute righteousness, we have to have a demon on the other side. In the most basic terms, we call that God and devil, or however you want to term that. Any yoga, I say yoga person because to me, yogi is a very high bar, and I've met very few yogis in my life.
Right.
So I take
personal. Say yoga practitioners?
Yes, I do. It's just so many syllables.
Aspiring yogis.
That's right. But they're not aspiring yogis.
They are, unfortunately.
They're aspiring handstanders.
Yeah.
Okay, people confuse what it means to practice yoga.
Yeah.
To practice yoga is to practice the yamas and the niyamas.
Yeah.
To take the Yoga Sutras to heart, to understand, like, what is the... Yoga is a science for living. It is not a practice on the mat. And I don't say this lightly because you and I both have excelled in the physical aspects of yoga.
Yes.
But that is, it's not even a part of traditional
I didn't start yoga for that reason. It's just something that became part of it. But a lot of people are drawn to the practice just because of the physical. But if you're just aspiring to have a advanced physical practice, that has nothing to do with yoga. And then if you align with something like Hamas, you're not aspiring, you're spiraling downwards, basically. You're doing the opposite. You're lowering your vibration. And the yogi should always study the yamas and niyamas and what we call the arishatvargas, the six poisons that tend to creep in. And it's all about awareness, but people somehow assume they're above it all already.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the problem comes. They just take in whatever they're being fed. They assume to be the truth. And the aspect of Sangha or the company you keep, who you surround yourself with, is there's placed so much importance on in the Vedic scriptures, mm-hmm. that who you associate with, you gradually become. So if people are only surrounding themselves with a certain group who preach the same message, no one's inquiring, no one's really taking the time to research or study, then they will just be sheep following the same path. And that's what's happening today in the world. The majority of the world are against Israel, which is incredible that so many nations are blind.
The depths of the lack of personal awareness, of aligning with terrorists, is beyond comprehension. Mm-hmm. But Jorgen, to me, the yamas and niyamas are an ascension. Mm-hmm. We have ahimsa as the base, the first of the yamas. And to me, it's a ladder that ends with the fifth of the niyamas, mm-hmm. right? Ishvara pranidhana, submission to a higher power. Mm-hmm. Now, the majority of people who have ever taken my training, and granted, a lot of people come to me because, again, they're obsessed with asana. They mm-hmm. they get offended by how much I get into philosophy. I'm like, guys, this is the
part
yoga.
Of it, yeah.
Like focus on what this means. Some people just really thrive on it. But I would say easily two-thirds of people who come mm-hmm. as proud atheists. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, well, again, it doesn't have to be about religion. You don't believe that there's a power that we can't understand that created so many miracles within your own body that you can't even count. Mm-hmm. This perfect order that we call the world that keeps spinning and functioning and balancing. And I think that that living in what I see is a very godless society, even in the face of, but yoga is predicated on Ishvara Pranidhana. I mean, even, yes.
It is. And I try not to push it on anyone. I have patience with people who consider themselves atheists. And I just wait and see that when the practice does its thing, which mm-hmm. is, you know, it's a merely physical practice, but it operates on so many levels. It changes mm-hmm. people. It helps them go through, difficult times and obstacles, and it changes who they are. And
if
they will
to.
Start believing in this complex subject of karma. Mm-hmm. Karma is not just, okay, some Karen does something and then she slips and we all laugh, you know? That is instant karma, but karma is so intricate and we cannot understand the depth of it. Something that we're doing today, you may not have the consequences mm-hmm. of for years.
For life.
It depends on what the lesson is. Exactly. It could be a different life.
Yeah.
If we can just hold ourselves accountable for everything that's happening to us in life, mm-hmm. then we're on the right path. Just know that everything that happens to you, and it's a tough pill to swallow, so mm-hmm. especially when there's difficulties and hardships,
right.
whatever happens to you, you have somehow created. We never question when good things happen to us. It's like, oh, I did. It's like we just take it
right.
as a nice gift. But when difficult things or hardships happen, we always, why me? And people assume yeah. this, because when people assume the victimhood, they are just in a stagnant, downward
right.
spiraling state.
Yeah.
And I attribute this to a whole ideology of victims mm-hmm. who call mm-hmm. themselves victims. Mm-hmm. And that is why nothing good will ever come out. As long as you're considering and having that victim role, nothing good will come out. But as yogis, you hold yourself accountable, you roll up your sleeves and go through difficult times, knowing that at the end, things will get easier. I mean, that's, in my opinion, the whole purpose of this life
yeah.
is to go through these challenges. How will you tackle evil and truth, goodness, mm-hmm. which side will you align yourself with? These are the tests. People don't realize these are the tests. If you align yourself with Free Palestine and Hamas, I'm sorry, you're contributing to so much suffering. If you're believing in Ahimsa, you have attributed so much suffering. You know, when we having the, when we wanted to go into Rafah, all eyes on Rafah, and we wanted to get those hostages out that were later executed, they could have been saved if it wasn't for all the demonstrations of people that prolonged by months. Those people could have been alive. And so if people can realize that in their well-intended state of nonviolence and peace, they have actually contributed to the opposite.
Yeah. I'm curious, Jorgen, because I know what my experience has been. What has been your online experience when you, I've seen particularly this week, you getting more and more vocal. I've seen you being vocal for months, but have you seen an evolution? Have you seen, I mean, we're in a ceasefire now and people are still murdering people on Bondi.
Yeah, people are changing. And so when I, my initial post,
which was a year ago.
May, I think, quite late.
April, this year?
April or May.
Yeah. This year?
Yeah.
Okay.
I wanted to post so many times, but my wife said, no, please.
But that's sad in and of itself.
At the end, I just said, I can't anymore, and I did it. And there was a lot of backlash, people reacting, how can you? Ahimsa, nonviolence, you know, Asteya, they stole the land. And I don't even bother talking about it if people don't want to do their research. But there was so much, and then they were trolling people from all kinds of places in Cairo and elsewhere, you know, and calling me Ashtanga Nazi. And I think they were hoping I was going to back down, but I that kind of doubled up, and they have since disappeared.
Okay.
And the people, I used to have maybe two or three likes on those posts. Now it's changing, and the people that were opposing before, I'm now getting likes. So for me, that's really comforting to know that maybe there are some people who are open to reassessing their opinion. You know, don't be so rigid and hold on to what you... I mean, there's a reason why I grew up having a certain opinion my whole life and then changed. And that's a sign of strength and intelligence, frankly, that you can change. You should always be open and review. And so... And I, you know, some students left, quite a few. But then some new students came who are very grateful that I'm supporting the community. And I believe that some of those people that left will come back later when more clarity comes. Because as things go on, as people see the true face of terrorism, what happened at Bondi, you know, people cannot stay blind forever. They will have to see that this is... This is not freedom fighting. This is not virtuous. This is a brutal, malicious, horrible terrorism. And Australians are very upset because their community has always been safe. And I love that country. Right. I love the country. I love Bondi. I've gone surfing there many times.
It's the most beautiful beach on earth.
Yeah.
It's astounding with the rock formations.
It's a great community. Amazing community. Yeah. And so I think they are really split. They're trying to be, a lot of people are really outrageous and expressing, you know, frustration and hate, I suppose. And I'm, you know, yes, and they're saying you should not have hate speech, but I think, why are we not allowed to criticize an ideology that is violent and hurtful? It's not that we're saying everyone within a religion. We're saying this part of this political part of that religion. Why are we not allowed to call that out? Why are we not
because
allowed to demonstrate after
afraid.
Such an event? There's a new rule that you cannot demonstrate after a terrorist attack. Why are people not allowed to express? Because they are afraid of offending a community. But if you're not identifying with that, if you're not identifying with violence, even if you're a Muslim, why would you feel offended because someone's pointing out violence? You're not part of that.
Well,
and we need more Muslims to speak up and be courageous. And that is a challenging thing, I understand, because they will be intimidated and possibly face violence themselves. But at some point, you have to make a choice. And that's the message of Bhagavad Gita. You do an action not based on the result mm-hmm. or what you think is going to happen. You do it because it's the right thing, and then you leave it up to God. You follow and pursue truth.
Yeah. I've taught in Sydney many times, but only in Sydney. So I only know Bondi, obviously, being a suburb of Sydney. So I only know my experiences in that community. I know that they have, especially this week, been very vocal and like, this isn't us, this isn't our community, this isn't how we behave. But at mm-hmm. the same time, I haven't heard a peep from them for mm-hmm. over 800 days.
Yeah.
I haven't seen them posting or supporting, or if anything, they're supporting the opposite.
Yeah.
Likewise, it's okay to literally call the day after the massacres to gas the Jews, but it's not okay to say radical Islam who just right. murdered 15 people on a beach is not okay.
Right.
So again, the level of double standards is beyond comprehension mm-hmm. and beyond all realm of humanity. There is no humanity in the way that the Jews have been treated. And it's not just the Muslims that need to speak up, it's allies. You're an ally. You're telling me the first time you spoke up was after almost 2 years. Mm-hmm. There are people who are just speaking up this week. There are people who haven't spoken up yet. Mm-hmm. I can tell you, without getting into the gory details, unless you want me to, I confronted Yoga Alliance and got on a phone call with two of their higher executives. Because of their failure to denounce the rampant anti-Semitism in the yoga world, despite the fact that they have denounced, anti-black, which doesn't exist. Not in the yoga world. We have rushed to right the wrongs of any mm-hmm. injustice and make sure that we're always open, tolerant, kind, all the things. They have talked about Asian hate. They have talked about discrimination against people who are missing limbs, literally. Mm-hmm. They've talked about discrimination against LGBTQ, discrimination against mm-hmm. everything.
And the Jewish community was supportive of all those communities.
Always. And we always have been throughout history. That's right. So I was told specifically by these two executives to my face from Yoga Alliance that they will not speak up against anti-Semitism within the yoga community. To this day, they have not said a word. Mm-hmm. And that all they could say was, well, that's your experience. And I'm like, it's my experience that I have students who have been my dedicated students for years telling me to go F myself, effing Zionist, you know, baby killer, and mm-hmm. spreading that all over the internet. Yes, that is my experience. And by the way, the first time this happened, you might be surprised, right around when you met Mossab, 2014, that was the turning point when the internet took over the world. Mm-hmm. And if you look at all social data about when things split on all things racial, 2014 was the inflection point. Yeah. There was a war. And I had, again, a die-hard student. Like, you know, we all have the people who follow us on every platform and mm-hmm. repost all our things and all the things, who told me that she was unfollowing me because I support Israel. Now, I've been supporting Israel since before yoga. I mean, since you know, before turn of the century. This isn't my first rodeo. But I was like, what? Wait, what? Mm-hmm. Because back then, believe it or not, everyone was still pro-Israel in the West. In 2014, that's when it started to turn. But I was so shocked.
In this country, yeah, for sure.
But since 2014, every time there's a war or conflict, and this is however you term it, I lose thousands of followers because I never shut up. I'm a very vocal person. Mm-hmm. But for Yoga Alliance to tell me to my face on a Zoom call, two people to my face, it was pretty funny, actually, Jorgen, which is why I'm not with Yoga Alliance anymore. I don't mind saying this in public, I will not be with them ever again, that they said to my face, we will not condemn anti-Semitism because there are people on both sides of the issue. I said on both sides of anti-Semitism. Mm-hmm. What do you mean? I said, well, what does that mean? There are people who support anti-Semitism and people who are against it. And they go to the war. I said, did I say a word about the war? I haven't said a word about the war. Mm-hmm. I am a Jew who has been a pillar of this global yoga community living in Los Angeles. And you're telling me that it's okay for your members to tell me to go to hell because I'm a Jew because of a war that's going on in Israel mm-hmm. that is one of the most just wars that's ever been fought, if not the most just war in the history of mankind. Mm-hmm. You can't denounce that?
Yeah. People are misinformed and cowards, both. You know, most people don't speak up out of fear of losing followers and such. I just decided not to care. Because, you know, in the end, you have to live with yourself. You have to pursue truth. And then I've had some intelligent students who had maybe an opposing view on this come up to me and ask, which you would hope yes. every student would do.
Yes.
Instead of just leaving. They would assume first that maybe the teacher is seeing something that I'm not seeing. And that's why I view this person as my teacher.
Yes.
So they ask. And I still have students who are maybe conflicted, but some students who understand. But the people that left without saying anything or asking,
yep.
you know, I'm hoping they will see eventually what the truth is. But social media is a problem because yes. everyone almost gets all their news and information from places like TikTok and very short video snippets. And today with AI, you can't even see what's truth anymore.
Yep.
I mean, you may view a video yep. clip that looks exactly right. Like the guy who was grazed by a bullet at Sydney bleeding.
Arsen Ostrovsky.
Hours later, there's a video of him sitting, getting his face mm-hmm. painted. That's a completely fake video, mm-hmm. but millions of people saw it.
That's right.
And so this is how disinformation starts.
Yep.
People are not questioning. They're just seeing and then reaffirming how bad Israel is, basically, when it's Israel is fighting a just war, basically just to be left alone. Just want to be left alone in that little place the size of New Jersey. Just
that's right.
Leave them alone.
Yeah.
15 million Jews left. And you can't afford to divide yourself based on politics. I say this to a lot of Jews
agree.
Who are like anti-government and saying, oh, this and that, and trying to be pro-Palestinian. And it's like, it's the wrong time
agree.
To mix in politics. There's not enough of you. You don't have the strength. You need to be united against evil first. Then you can talk politics later.
100%.
You need to be alive to talk politics.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's 100% true. And one thing that I always leave my door open and always tell people, you have questions? Ask me. Ask me. I will have this conversation. They don't ask. They don't want to deal with it. But also, I'm like, you think Jews are violent? Come with me to synagogue or go to any synagogue, yeah. any Shabbat. See what we talk about. The whole mm-hmm. prayer book, the word you see the most, mm-hmm. besides like God, is shalom. Everywhere. Peace, 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 peace. It's why we exist. Mm-hmm. Every prayer, every statement. There's people do not understand that the Jews of Israel live under constant existential threat mm-hmm. from terrorists on every border. And the same countries that want to give these terrorists a state do not want the terrorists in their own state.
Right.
So the hypocrisy of let's leave them there next to the Jews, it will be okay, is...
You know, most people who express opinion about this have never been to the country or
that's
area.
Right.
And they think they know, and just because they have a few good Muslim friends, they oppose, you cannot say anything bad about Islam.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And of course, I have Muslim friends too.
Mm-hmm.
They're moderate, They're not extreme. They're not trying to kill anyone. But there's a large percentage of those jihadists. Unfortunately, we have to address it.
Particularly in that region.
Yes, but a concentration in that region and certain areas of the world. Like UK, there's a large percentage of these extremists. And so if you're not willing to address it and deal with it, it's only going to get worse.
Yeah.
It's only going to get worse. And if people cannot see that it's so clear that one side wants to be left alone, was never interested in conquering, they were just exiled, just waiting to come back. And the other side is full-on imperialism and colonizers and have basically colonized a large part of the world. So to call them the victims is crazy. And do we forgive them just because they're then brown? And in history, oh, British were white and they were colonizers. Yeah, well, the Muslims were far bigger colonizers. Yeah. And so I think people need to leave this whole idea of race and color. And it's hard for people to just leave that whole thing alone. We are not this body. We're not this race. We're not this body. We're a spirit soul.
So I studied with Dharma Mitra, different, obviously, from Ashtanga. And he's
a Brazilian guy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He has this unbelievable concept. Okay. So he says, imagine a bubble. Mm-hmm. Okay. And a bubble, whatever, it's just flying around, right? That's us. We're bubbles. We're just bubbles in this world. If you pop the bubble, there's nothing that distinguishes what was inside the bubble from what was outside of the bubble. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is the same concept. Have you ever read the book or short story, The Egg?
No.
Okay. It's mind blowing. You have to read it. But it's this concept of, okay, once you put a drop in the ocean or you pop a bubble, that air, that water can never be extracted again. Once a drop drops in the ocean, I could take out another drop, but there's no way to take out that drop. Our souls are one soul surrounded by a bubble. When this bubble is gone, the soul goes into the ethernet. The ether. And can never be extracted again.
Right.
So we think of, I 100% believe in both karma and reincarnation, but we tend to think about it as this life, this life, this life. But the fact is that in this theory, we are all people at all times in the past, present, and future simultaneously. First of all, we as humans live in a three-dimensional world, right? In time is the fourth dimension. So in this world, we can only perceive that which is tangible in this moment, right? There are some people who can see ghosts or hear voices, like they're vibrating beyond this third dimension. But beyond this third dimension, we don't have this construct of time, okay? Right. So you will not be a next life. You are me sitting here because a piece of you, when that became part of the air and could never be pulled out again, and there comes a soul, which is an amalgamation of every soul that takes every form in this body, that humanity is an organism.
Philosophy, there's two major schools. And what I adhere to is the idea that there is a particle in all of us which is the Paramatman, the greater soul. But then you have your Jivatman, your individual soul. And when you leave this body, it's not like the drop in the ocean is not part of the ocean, but it can never be the ocean either. And if you take away all the drops, it would still not deplete God. God is not affected by that. God can never cease to be.
Right.
And so it's more like when we leave this body, the only thing we take with us when the soul wanders to the next body is you take with you your vasanas or samskaras, your tendencies. So whatever unfinished desires or
lessons,
characteristics, you will be born into a body suitable for that. But it is your individual path. Until you are liberated. So it's slight difference.
Yeah.
It's not like we blend into everything and everyone is a mishmash of everyone.
Yeah.
But there's a part of us that is all connected to God, of course.
Right. And the challenge with this conversation, mm-hmm. relative to the conversation we're having, would be to say that also the terrorists have the same Atman, that we all share the same spark, mm-hmm. and that in fact in Judaism, the afterlife, as you would term it or think of it, has no heaven or hell. Mm-hmm. Everyone goes to the same place or whatever, mm-hmm. And in that that's an interesting distinction when we take into account this whole conversation of good and evil, because I could also argue, now I'm going to go ahead and steel man the argument, that proves that we are all the same, that we are all, the children or the spark or the manifestation of God, mm-hmm. Energy of God sense, but God also gives us free will. Mm-hmm. And that's where the divergence comes. That's like saying that every cell in your body is equal. So therefore, if you get cancer, there's nothing bad about that. It's just different cells. Mm-hmm. So that there's some, it's interesting if you listen, he hasn't talked about what I'm talking about specifically now, but Gad Saad, who talks about evolutionary biology and how it applies to all of this, because I think that understanding our own godliness does in a large part come back to the science of evolutionary biology and humans as a broader organism of mankind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just think it's really important to always aspire to have that connection with the divine.
Yep.
If you do that, then you're going to be on the right track.
That's right.
But to do that, you have to know what the qualities are, what you aspire towards.
Yeah,
you cannot have qualities of desire, lust, anger, hate, envy, jealousy. You cannot have that cultivated within you and still assume you're going to be on a godlike vibration. It's not going to be like that.
Yeah, amen.
Amen.
We're gonna, I think, wrap up on that because I have a student coming in a couple of minutes.
Yes.
Jorgen, this has been amazing. It's been amazing to connect with you.
Yeah.
It's in the show notes, but why don't you tell people where they can find you, where they can practice with you, tell them about your Instagram, your Omkar 108, whatever you, it's the Jorgen Christensen hour.
Yes, I do teach, I continue to teach, but online daily. It's omkar108.com. And I teach from anywhere, and you can be anywhere. I can be in Australia. I just have to wake up at midnight and teach, but I do that for my students. And so, yeah, if you're interested in classes, please sign up. But I'd like to say this. If you have any doubts about anything that we've spoken about, or if you are on the pro-Palestinian side and you still see that as the right thing, I urge you to please do your own research of history, or even reach out to any one of us, ask questions, so we can maybe dispel and put you on the right track.
And I'll even say, because dispel and put you on the right track almost sounds like, oh, okay, well, you're wrong out of the gate.
They are.
But
they are. I rightfully say that. I rightfully say it's not like it's not coming out of ego, but it is so clear.
Yes.
When you align yourself, it is so clear that aligning with truth and light, that is what Israel is doing. They want to be left alone, have their country in peace. And Jews, of course, deserve to live. Yeah. Thank you very much. And so, it is, you're on the wrong path. You're on the violent path if you support terrorism.
Yeah. Should go without saying. That being said, I do always reply to every single comment that is respectful that comes in on these shows. If you come in with lies, propaganda, hate, you'll be deleted and blocked. So I open the conversation. I love answering questions. I will give you facts, never propaganda. Jorgen will do the same. And I do hope that you find it in your heart to look at facts to understand what it means to truly be a yoga practitioner, what it really means, not the Instagram version, not the TikTok version, what ahimsa actually says. What does it actually mean? And if you can show me the place in all yoga doctrine that says, side with the people who behead babies, I will go ahead, lay down my arms and say, you're right. I am no longer a yoga practitioner. This is not what aligns with me. But as somebody who's been studying this for decades, and in Jorgen, who's been studying it for even decades longer than I have, I can tell you flat out that there is nothing in yoga doctrine that would ever say that it's okay to align with terror. Understand, I am telling you, as a Jew, as a product of the Jewish community, of the Jewish education system, that I was always brought up with one precept, and that is, as Jews, we can't afford to hate. That is how Jews live. That is what we learn. We function from a basis of peace, tolerance, and acceptance. Don't get sucked in by the propaganda. Lies are just lies. Look to credible sources when you want credible information, and always, always choose the moral path. Calling for death to anyone ever is not the moral path. I should not have to lay that out, nor should Jorgen have to lay out half of the points that he made today. But I hope you listen. I hope you listen again. Ask the questions, be informed, and look into your heart. It knows that there is no place for hate. Anything else you want to say before we wrap up?
No, just God bless you all. Harium, Shabbat Shalom.
And Am Yisrael Chai. Thank you so much for tuning in, and happy Hanukkah for those of you who are celebrating. Merry Christmas for those of you who will be celebrating. And may we all have a very, very blessed new year. Thank you.
DC politicians want to enact harmful credit card mandates that could take away your cash back and rewards points. Perks that stretch your budget and make life a little easier. Losing these benefits means less money for your family's everyday essentials like gas and groceries. The perks you rely on could disappear, leaving you with higher costs and fewer options. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.
Since 1981, Unbound has connected people like you with families worldwide on their self-directed paths out of poverty. A brighter future is possible for these families when we all walk together. Sponsor a child today, and you'll help a family take the first steps on their path. Change their future in just one click. Start walking with your new friend today at unbound.org/walk.